Welcome to On Demand with Jenna Ellis. This is our AFR exclusive podcast where we do a deep dive into topics that you need to hear about with guests that you love to hear from. And today we are talking with my dear friend Alex McFarland, who wrote a fantastic piece in Town Hall that I want to talk about this morning that's titled Manosphere, Masculinity Without Virtue and Sacrifice. And you know, this kind of gets into the modern crisis of manhood and how, you know, we're not even allowed, according to some, to say the term father. It's like the non-birthing human, maybe, or person, or, you know, we're even allowed to say person and human anymore. I mean, it's beyond so absurd. But the culture has for a long time, even before this sort of post-post truth on gender and questions of human sexuality, for a long time, the culture has degraded and demeaned the positional authority that the Bible specifically gives to men in the three institutions, but specifically the two institutions that he has ordained of the church and the family, and has consistently withered that away to the point that men either are betas, that we call them. They don't have sort of any measurable testosterone. They don't want to be the leaders, the providers, you know, understanding all of that. Or they kind of swing the opposite way, like the Andrew Tate kinds of the world that, well, in order to have masculinity, you just have to subjugate women. You got to go after what you want. You have to be almost this bully, sort of a man's man, the brawler. And neither of those two extremes are actually the biblical example of what masculinity should look like. And that, I think, ties into a bigger issue that I've been talking about for a while, which is the definition of the family. Because if you remove the man as the head of the church, and then also, importantly, the head of the family, and what that actually looks like to be a servant provider, to be a leader, and that masculinity that is necessary to shepherd the family, then you get off track into feminism, into, you know, all kinds of things that don't actually resemble what the family unit is supposed to look like and how God ordained it in Genesis. So with that kind of lengthy introduction, let's welcome in Alex McFarland. And this is such a great and timely opinion piece in Town Hall. And let's kind of just go through it and unpack it, Alex.
Well, Jenna, thanks for having me. I have such respect for the work that you do, and I appreciate you very much allowing me to be on. You know, I've been very blessed to write a lot of op-eds over the years when, you know, the Lord kind of motivates me to speak on a subject. And so over the last several months, I've been seeing this word more and more, the word manosphere. And I just felt led to write an article. But we have a crisis of manhood and masculinity, and we need, with God's help, to recover biblical manhood in our culture.
Yeah, and let's talk about that first, because if we're talking about the problem, I think we first have to talk about what the ideal is. And it's not just the ideal in terms of the perception and the, you know, the cute postage stamp and the Norman Rockwell paintings, but what is the actual biblical view of what manhood and masculinity should look like?
Well, for the majority of Christian Western civilization, you know, manhood, and by the way, everything I'm about to say, it really emerges from scriptural passages. But manhood was tied to, you know, duty and sacrifice and courage and self-control, being a moral example. Manhood. He was true to his wife. He loved his family. He would lay down his life for his family, his bride, and his children. And he honored God, and he carried himself with humility and composure. And, you know, that's really kind of been mocked in recent years. 50 years ago, the feminist movement in America, you know, emerged. Jenna, I'm old enough to remember, like, at the mall, they would sell posters that said, you know, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. And there would be, like, some funny, you know, caricature And men just were, it became popular to, you know, posit that men were just unnecessary. And not all, but, you know, in many quarters, men, I'm just going to say it, they were sperm donors and pay the bills, you know. But otherwise, men were a problem, men were a bother. And so a lot of males have felt alienation and disrespect. And if you tell somebody long enough that they're unnecessary and unneeded, they'll go elsewhere and do other things. So in a way, the manosphere is somewhat understandable, but it's a reaction and a rebellion against cultural contempt for men. And the woke left has, you know, had this mantra of toxic masculinity. And so it's almost as if they're men, they're saying, okay, you think I'm toxic? Well, watch this. And so there are YouTube channels where men just speak about their contempt for women, and they'll do what they can to, you know, make fun and denigrate women. It's almost, you know, hyper promiscuity, you know, use and degrade women, you know, have sex and then, you know, disappear. And neither of those, I mean, is healthy. My goodness, it's unhealthy for individuals. It's toxic for our society. We need to understand, and there's so much I can say about the happiness, the value, the fulfillment, not to mention health, longevity, and prosperity of committed marriage and family relationships. So the vacuum created by radical feminism, radical egalitarianism, just this woke culture that says family doesn't matter, gender is fluid, and masculinity is the problem. It's created just a perfect storm of things detrimental to people and society. And in my article and in all of my speaking, and I'll mention that again in a moment, but you know, I'm calling young men to experience what God designed for our good and blessing, and that's biblical manhood.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's such an important contrast to say, okay, what does the Bible require from men, and everything that you described, virtue, sacrifice, covenantal responsibility, headship of family, I mean, all of these things, those are character qualities. The Bible doesn't Yes. require men to be wealthy, to have status, to, you know, marry the hot girl, to, you know, I mean, all of these things that are status symbols or what men chase after, that the world is telling them to chase after, that's not any part of what the Bible requires of masculinity. And obviously the same thing can be said about femininity. And, you know, we've talked on the show a lot about femininity and the biblical woman and all of that. So I'm not discounting that at all. But we're focused on men for this particular conversation. And so in your article, Alex, you argue that this new manosphere, and I want to ask you to define that in a moment, that whole category of influencers and, you know, the secular response basically does actually address real male frustrations that you also mentioned, like loneliness, purposelessness, declining marriage, confusion about their identity, being mocked, being told they're not needed, you know, all of those things. But the manosphere is not identifying the correct biblical solution and encouraging men to rise up again and be men. Instead, the manosphere is encouraging them along other lines.
Yeah. You know, one man I identify that, you know, very frustrated, he said, in my family, he said, I'm an ATM that gets yelled at. In other words, the value and the presence of the man is just to provide money, to to be that, cash dispenser when needed, but otherwise, stay out of my life. So there's a lot of grievance. And there's just this assumption that there's a bias against men. A mutual friend and colleague that is just one of the greatest voices in the world is a guy named Dr. Gary Chapman. And he wrote a fantastic book called The Five Love Languages. And Dr. Chapman, we've interviewed many times, and he basically says that men and women have an emotional, love language that will most bring fulfillment and joy even. And when you know your spouse's or your children's love language and you intentionally speak to that, it keeps them emotionally and psychologically fulfilled. And he said, for men, almost overwhelmingly, the number one thing that a man craves is respect. And, with, five decades plus of feminism, men in our culture, and maybe even in some Christian families too, Jenna, men feel very disrespected. They do not feel valued. And the manosphere is, men acting out on this. By the way, Dr. Chapman has said that, having employed the love languages concept since the late 1960s, he said he believes virtually every marriage could be saved if you know your partner's love language and you speak to it. And, for most women, the love language would be quality time together or acts of service. That's another show, perhaps. But, if men are strong and do male things, like I document in the article how in, school, beginning in kindergarten even, when little boys do the things that little boys do, like they're competitive and rough and tumble, and masculine little boys, that's discouraged. And rather than in childhood sports, more and more, rather than having winners and therefore losers, there's just you play and nobody wins. Everybody gets a participation trophy, and that really has squelched some of the things that are really bring out greatness as boys grow into men. By the way, Jenna, I don't know if you know this, maybe you do, but in the last 20 to 25 years, the number of men that earn bachelor, master, or doctorates has radically plummeted. Right now, women earn 60% of all the undergrad bachelor degrees. Women earn 64% of all master's degrees. And right now, women are earning 60% of all the doctoral and professional degrees. So among attorneys, among medical professionals, the number of men even entering those professions is decreasing. And, thank God for the, accomplished women that are taking leadership positions in our culture, but we need to raise boys who are goal setters and achievers and, yes, are competitive and want to find their niche and be the best that they can be. So this, suppression of natural masculine competitive strength instincts, it's beginning to, bear some very negative repercussions for our culture at large.
Yeah. And, you mentioned, Alex, how the response for men is, to all of this is just, kind of acting out on this kind of manosphere. And, what I see on a lot of the Instagram reels and social media and all of that, from the female side, because obviously, the algorithm is knows me and, knows that I'm a single woman and, pushes different products and different reels and things like that. And a lot of what I see and what I've done also in actively going out and seeking how women are responding to a lot of this, that I honestly, as a single woman, resonate with, is that it kind of boils down to this. For the first time in modern history, throughout world history, right? For the first time, women have their own careers. We should have ministries full time if we're still single, like I do. But, you know, for the first time, women have their own money, their own means, and they're not necessarily looking for a man to sign contracts, close houses, provide, you know, all of those things. They're looking to date, get married, respect a man based pretty much solely on character. And that's failing. And I think, you know, kind of it's a cyclical thing, like which came first, the lack of respect or the lack of character. You know, and I think that the overall point is that men, regardless of whether women respect them, should achieve the biblical character that God requires of them anyway. And women, if they are married, should respect and love their husbands as God commands, you know, regardless of whether they think that there's some improvement that could be done. But then, you know, for the single woman like me, I mean, I'm looking out there and going, there aren't any real men left. I mean, you know, of the men that I've dated, which very few even get to the point of dating as they automatically disqualify themselves on other reasons. But of the few, you know, it doesn't seem like any of them really understood what it meant to be a family man biblically. And that was the key reason that manifested itself in other ways, but or various ways, you know, person to person. But that was the main bottom line reason why I just said, you know, I don't think that we would be equally yoked. And so I ultimately didn't marry the person I was dating. So, you know, that I think is a huge problem that women now are choosing basically to just opt out. And men are saying, well, fine. And we're left then with even more loneliness, purposelessness, and declining marriage.
You know, this is fascinating to talk about. It really is. And let me say the thing about men. Many men, and in a way this is a kind of pragmatism, they look at almost anything with a cost-benefit analysis. It is a fantastic thing, and Jenna, I say this having been, you know, in ministry for 3 decades. In fact, right now I'm in Montana. I just moments ago was in front of 130 high school and college age young people that are hungry. I mean, hungry for truth, and really hungry for practical, you know, implementable things about building a future and building a family. And so, God and family, I mean, having a relationship with Jesus, having a relationship with a spouse and children, this is what life is all about, really. And men, when they are encouraged in the right ways, they will rise to the challenge. They really will. But from a cost-benefit analysis, here's where a lot of young adult males and not-so-young adult males have gone in their reason. They're like, look, if I'm moral, if I provide, but it doesn't get me the respect I crave, why bother? And I'm talking, Jenna, I've counseled Christian families that were imploding, and men are like, I've been true to my spouse, I've worked hard, I've paid the bills, I've tried to take him to church, you know, I've tried to be the exemplar, and yet my wife still doesn't respect me. My wife is, you know, spends time online. If I can pour myself out for all the things and so in the marketplace, in society, and even at home, I'm just a stupid guy to be disrespected and kicked to the curb. Why bother? Now, listen, we all should do right and live right because it's right to do right. But everybody wants to feel valued. Everybody wants to feel respected. Matthew 25, by the way, you know, when we give a cup of cold water in Jesus' name, it's as if we've done it for the Lord. And I want to say to everybody out there, especially the frustrated spouses, try to love your spouse, and women, try to love your man as unto Christ. I've had women say to me, well, my husband isn't respectable. He doesn't pick up his clothes off the floor. I come home and he hasn't, you know, started dinner like I ask him to, or whatever. The thing about human nature, and this is where it really takes the Holy Spirit to help us, very often things become self-fulfilling prophecies. If you don't show the respect, then he's not going to rise up and be respectable. If you yeah. don't prime the pump with grace and love and patience. Listen, we all have emotional and psychological and spiritual needs. And, you know, in marriage, you know, sometimes one or both partners are not feeling that their needs are being met. But the answer is not to belittle or degrade or to withdraw. The answer is with God's help and, you know, prayer and commitment and consistency. Stay in there and stick it out and be committed. And I want to get back to the state of men, but let me just say that it's not surprising that Satan would attack marriages, families, because marriage, Christian marriage, is the greatest vehicle for sanctification and growth. Mm-hmm. You know, Jenna, the longer I've lived and the more that I've researched, worked with people, and just live life myself, the institution of family, it was just genius on God's part. Obviously so, because it's God that was the, you know, the creator of the human race, marriage and family. And Satan has attacked the family, and there are definitely consequences. And the couples that have worked through the rocky seasons and leaned into the Lord, and God has given them the grace and the strength and the wisdom and the perseverance to get through the crucible of life's experiences, shall we say. When you emerge on the other side, you've learned more about the faithfulness of God, the value of resilience and commitment. And so, you know, the family in the Western world has taken a lot of hits in recent years. And this article I wrote about the manosphere is not only how, you know, it's kind of a reaction of males that feel frustrated and belittled. Let me talk about this. Earlier in the segment, you were talking about how women, you know, now have their own, you know, sources of income, and, you know, it's not like women are as dependent on men as they have been in previous, you know, periods of history. But, and you're absolutely right, you know, wise women that are looking for a mate, they're looking for character. And they're looking, and I tell the young men, Jenna, it's fascinating. In all of our hundreds of camps, conferences, sessions, you know, men aren't asking me the questions of 20 years ago, like, you know, what happened to the biblical manuscripts? You know, does history and archaeology prove the Bible? Yes. Men are asking me, how do I find a godly woman? How do I know, there's no, like, Alex, how can I know God's will for the spouse that I am praying to have one day? This is great. This is wonderful. But, you know, you mentioned the women that are looking for men of character. On the other side, let me talk about feminism that has belittled men, the secular world that has almost, you know, they've relished tearing men down. You know, if a guy is not 6 feet tall, you know, he's not worth investing in. And it was a Beyonce song 10 years ago that talked about slaying, slaying. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to slay? Well, you know, actually that's a term that came out of the gay community originally, but there are so many videos and social media reels where girls, you know, laugh and they love to like make a guy think he has a chance and then publicly humiliate and mm-hmm. trash this guy, slaying, you know, it's like one of the highest, you know, trophies is to publicly humiliate and tear down some guy after having, you know, you've led him on, making him think he has a chance. And the idea, I write about it in the article, that you know, men and women should be perpetual adversaries, and the winner is the one who has destroyed the other. That's just so ungodly. That's so ungodly. Yeah. And, you know, I said men go after a cost-benefit analysis. That's true. The other thing is, if a man feels like he's being challenged, then, you know, most men will take a posture. Look, you will not beat me. I will beat you. So the men of the manosphere, you know, they're going to slay right back. And nobody wins here. So what's the answer? Well, the answer, as is the case with everything, the one who is the personification of goodness, truth, beauty, life, it's Jesus. And so what we need to do, and it's going to have to be the church that leads out in this, biblical manhood is modeled most clearly in Jesus Christ. Strength, courage, sacrifice, self-control, grace, love, truth. Jesus stared down evil and darkness. Jesus protected the vulnerable. Jesus spoke truth fearlessly but with grace. Jesus humbled himself to serve others. And this is what a man is supposed to do as well. And I want to say to all the guys, listen, the most fulfillment you'll ever have, it's not going to be in accomplishments, money, sexual conquests. The most fulfilled you'll ever be is when you've given your life for things besides yourself, God, family, country. That's what we need in the men of our nation.
Yeah, and what a great word, Alex, because I know, you know, for anyone who is single who's listening can totally resonate with this kind of competitive whole arena of dating that is the modern world, where it's almost like, you know, he who is, or who at least projects the least interest and the most effusiveness and passivity can dominate, you know, that relationship. Because if the moment that you say that you actually care, then you're at a disadvantage. And, you know, it's almost like the Hunger Games of dating. And it's not only, you know, does the Bible not prescribe a way that you have to go from single to being married? I mean, there are commands for when we live single and when we are married, but not a process of how to get there that's explicitly prescribed in Scripture. But I can definitively say, based on how our modern culture treats each other during the dating process and the cultural wisdom, that it's absolutely unbiblical. I mean, not even just, you know, the immorality of the, you know, sexual conquest and things like that, but even in good faith relationships between men and women of that competitiveness, of that advantage taking, of slaying. That's actually, I didn't know that was the origin of that term, and that makes a lot of sense. And none of those things are building one's own character or loving the other person as a fellow Christian either. I mean, you know, this isn't something where you are almost intentionally disrespecting the imago Dei of the other person that you're in a relationship with. If you treat them as a conquest or as, you know, somebody that you need to dominate and you can't let them get the best of you. And those are the kinds of character lacking in both men and women today. And also if spouses treat each other that way, that it's just a matter of getting ahead. And I mean, I can't tell you how many women's events I have been to at various churches, and I rarely ever go anymore because the entire focus was just complaining about their husbands. And it was so wrong. I mean, it was gossip. It was also unproductive, and it was defamatory against their character. And it was very disrespectful. And that's unfortunately what a lot of women do. And so I understand where this whole, you know, manosphere has arisen out of. But the point here, I think, is to drive this back to not only respecting and cherishing and loving the Imago Dei in the other person, whether you end up marrying them or not, if you're single, or whether you are, you know, whether you always like them as a person or their actions if you are married, but understanding that the call that the Lord has on our lives is to, as his scripture says, as much as lies within you, be at peace with all men. Because, you know, I mean, God knows I can't control anyone else's actions. I'm only responsible for what I do, how I provoke or not, and then how I respond or not. And those building that kind of godly character in yourself first and foremost is, I think, where the church needs to focus for both men and women. But when we're talking today about men specifically, in the last few minutes we have here, how do you think that the church needs to address this first with men? Because I've made this point on radio several times. Women could be the most feminist, liberal, you know, total purple hair, man-hating beasts, right? And it would still be incumbent upon the men to lead first and to be who God has ordained them to be as the positional authority first. And women can do this first. But I think in society, if men would actually return to their character and their God-given nature and responsibility and authority and accountability first, we would see a radical change in society. How can the church do a better job at this?
Wow, great. And Jenna, I commend you for devoting airtime to this, because, look, as goes the family, so goes the nation. And I want to say to everybody, and it's, Jenna, it's kind of become my little soapbox. I mean, I'm an apologetics teacher. And you think about the evidence for the Bible, but this is where my heart is at. You know, lose at anything else but win with your family. And to every man, every woman, you know, number one, obviously, is Jesus. But plan on, with God's help, finding a spouse. And, you know, they say, how do I find the right person? Focus on being the right person. But let me say this. So churches, pastors, preach, and let's maximize on family. And from childhood up, be that person of Christ-likeness and character so that I can fulfill everything God put me here to do. Here's the beautiful thing. In 1 Corinthians 13, it says, love believes all things. Verse 7, 1 Corinthians 13, 7. Love bears all things, believes all things. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean we just believe everything, but it really means, I did some study on this, 1 Corinthians 13, 7. It means it believes the good, it assumes the good about another person unless proven otherwise. Now, I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, so I ask everybody's forgiveness. But I was in Africa on many preaching trips to South Africa, and in the Bimba language, I heard some repeatedly these Zambian people would say, Jabatama Ninji. And again, I'm probably in my southern way pronouncing it wrong. Jabatama Ninji. And I said, what does that mean? And this man, they said, you have separated out the good. I said, I'm not sure what does that mean. He said, well, anybody can point out what's bad, but Jabatama Ninji, you have lifted out, you have pointed out what is good. And, you know, I think in love and in our relationships, that's what we need to do. And I've heard the women's conferences where, you know, the whole thing is just a two-hour joke about what buffoons men are. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. We men can be knuckleheads. I get it. But you know what? How about we, in the spirit of 1 Corinthians 13, let's point out what's good. We're all the beneficiaries of some people who invested to get us here. And you know what? Wives, maybe your husband is frustrating. Let God remind you of what's good about him and make sure that he knows he's appreciated. And we need to do that for each other. And we need to show to upcoming generations of kids that people are not things to be used, but they're made in God's image, humans to be valued. And as the church, as the Christians, let's restore an ethic of family, an ethic of love, and men, let's restore an ethic of Christ-like manhood.
Amen. Well, thank you so much, Alex, for writing this article, for addressing this topic, and also joining today. This is something that the church absolutely needs to address because young men are looking for direction, even older men. I mean, there is such a crisis of lack of family and loneliness across all ages. I mean, this is such an important topic. We could spend hours and hours talking about it here, but I just really appreciate the thoughtfulness and the compassion as well that you approach this with, because this isn't about, you know, speaking down to men or saying, you know, you better do this, or, you know, kind of that kind of heavy-handed sort of discipline. It's more out of love and saying, you know, if this, if you want to get out of the depression, the loneliness, the, you know, all of these things that you're experiencing, here's God's path and what he designed for your good. So again, Alex's article that you should read is in Town Hall. It's titled Manosphere Masculinity Without Virtue and Sacrifice. That is all the time that we have for On Demand, but this is why these deep dives are so important, in addition to what we do every day, daily on radio. So if you have a topic or a guest idea, a lot of these we receive from listeners, and so we love to answer your questions that you have. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net, and I will see you next Friday here on Demand.